was a mighty nation, blessed above all of creation. It was a rare and precious pearl, conceived in faith and liberty, home of the brave, land of the free. It was the envy of the world. But this shining city on a hill has turned from the Creator's will and let evil take control. Now the reckless men who lead them want to strip away their freedom and to steal their very soul. Now it's smoke and mirrors, switching bait, criticize and confiscate, and let the guilty walk away. In this once righteous, godly nation, in the halls of education, they forbid a child to pray. They say we need to spread the wealth. They pretend to guard the health of the feeble and the poor, while the hand they hold behind their back confuses and conceals the fact that the wolf is at the door. There's an unseen hand that pulls a string. It makes his little puppets dance to every song he sings. As the night folds in on a rising tide, look beyond the shadows, behold a pale horse ride. They claim to seek a new world order, nations without borders, but don't believe the lie. Even in this wealthy nation, it could come down to starvation in the twinkling of an eye. They tell us there will soon be peace, our lives will be an endless feast, but they lead us toward the dark. In the distance, sabers rattle, and the armies train for battle as the beast prepares his mark.
Welcome, welcome. Resurrect the Republic Truth Radio broadcast, RBN, RTR Truth Media Reloaded. This is live. I am here, barely. For all of you out there listening that know that it's been a little bit difficult for me to get on the air lately because of circumstances surrounding the details of my situation here in Oregon. However, I'm here for as long as I can be tonight. And I have with me a special guest. Now, keep in mind that in the next couple days, we're going to be digging into some information regarding Las Vegas, the shooting, the trials, the situation that we have with the prosecution who has committed crimes now, as far as I'm concerned, a RICO organization, trying to influence the judge into pulling the case back in. There's a lot of things that need to be discussed regarding that. But tonight I have a special guest on the line who I've been meaning to have on for some time. First, I need to give a shout out to my best friend out there, Sal, and thank him for facilitating this this conversation. And hopefully what will be a mutually rewarding situation where we have this gentleman come back on. Glenn Whittingham from the House of Fern. He worked over 40 years in aviation, which is a highly regulated industry. Every nut, bolt, piece of metal, fabric that goes into an airplane is controlled and regulated by the government, and Glenn has pretty much firsthand knowledge on a lot of that. He started out as a mechanic in 76 and worked his way up to engineering, working at least 15 years in engineering exclusively, although the last 5 years have been out of work because of the change that Obama brought us. So anyway, he participated in designing a hydraulic system of the F-35 Joint Strike Fighter. In the early 1990s, somebody told him about the two classes of citizens, and he told them that they were crazy. They brought out some court cases and talked about it, and he's been digging into that ever since. Which, you know, here on this show, everybody knows we've been also doing the same. So, without any further ado, we're gonna talk a little bit. He can introduce himself the rest of the way and share a little bit more of his background. Glenn Winningham, how are you, sir?
I'm doing well, thank you. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm blessed. I'm blessed to be here, and we have a lot to talk about. First, I want to just remind you that because of my environment, Glenn and I have talked about his possibility of running the show, possibly running the show if I have to fall off for whatever reason. He has a pretty good presentation for you, and we're looking to have him come on regularly. I hope that that's the case. So why don't you just start from the beginning and let our audience know who you are and what we're going to be talking about tonight.
Well, you know, back in the early 90s, I did a lot of contracts, and so I've been all over the world. I've been across the pond dozens of times. I've been over to Europe. I was participated in Operation Desert Storm, moving troops. I was in Al Jubail when a couple of fighters did emergency landings because they'd been shot up over Iraq during the Iraq incident. I saw lots of hardware over in Saudi Arabia. We were moving troops. I was working out of Zaragoza, Spain, moving troops over to various points in the Middle East. I've been all over Europe. Anyways, so this guy went and brought up these two issues of the two classes of citizens, and I've worked in aviation all my life, and it's highly regulated, and I know how law works because I deal with law and regulation all day, every day. So I told him he was crazy. And then he brought out some court cases, and I started looking into it. And the more I found out about it, the more I found out he's 100% correct. Everything's an illusion. And it's all in what you volunteer to do. Everything's voluntary. Everything's an illusion. The Matrix is real. So then in the mid-90s, I ran into this guy that showed me how to do court work. And so I at that time wanted to file a lawsuit against some government officials. And I did. I've been in literally dozens of court cases that I have initiated. I've been to the courts of appeals and even the Supreme Court. I've been to the Supreme Court five times. And every time when I go to the Supreme Court, I tell them, it says right in their rules, it says that they can turn away any case they want. And it talks about filing fees. And so I tell them right up front, I tell them, you have no right to turn this case away and you have no right to tax me. And it's because I'm one of the people. And every time they've accepted the case and every time there's been no filing fees. And it gets docketed. Now, I can tell you that I don't know if you know Michael New. He was the guy in the Army, the U.S. Army, that refused to take the U.N. patch back in the 90s. And I met his father. And his father was telling me how they had exhausted their appeals. He had appealed to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court had refused to hear it. And when the Supreme Court refuses to hear a case, it doesn't even get docketed. And all of my cases got docketed. I could give you case numbers. So then, what happens invariably is because really what it comes down to is there's no Article III courts. It's all bar members. And the bar members are foreign agents of the Roman cult is what they are. And so because it's all bar members, There's no Article III courts. Matter of fact, I just filed a criminal complaint in Senate Sessions against a bunch of judges, and one of the issues in the criminal complaint is that Congress had breached the trust because they failed to provide Article III courts. And one of the requirements of an Article III court, there's court cases that talk about it, is that they have to be able to convene a common law jury, and there are no common law juries. The best you'll get in a federal court is a jury in equity or admiralty. Okay, and either one of those, the judge can ignore the decision of the jury, and the jury's only there to advise the conscience of the court. Which is a big farce.
We've seen that.
Yeah, no joke, eh? So, that's one of the requirements, and in fact, the courts of appeals, the Fifth Circuit used to advertise on their website that they were Article III court, and that was one of the issues I brought up, not in this last petition for certiorari, but the previous one, and I said, under what authority, that was one of the questions, under what authority does the Fifth Circuit for the Court of Appeals advertise themselves as having Article III judges when they can't convene a common law jury? And they took it down. Now it's all down.
God bless you.
So, anyways, it's interesting. I just basically tear a strip off them because at this point I've been there five times, and what they do is every time they accept the case and it gets docketed, and then every time the Department of so-called Justice, which is what I call them in the case, because that's another one, is because, see, the Department of Justice was set up in 1789, I think. It was 1794. It was like with the original Judiciary Act of 1792, I think. Anyways, that was when the Department of Justice was set up. But what happened is in 1875, they went and set up the Solicitor General's office. And the Solicitor General was supposed to hear all appeals to the Supreme Court. Prior to that, it was supposed to have been the Attorney General. And so in my last petition for certiorari to the Supreme Court, I went and sent, it says in the rules you're supposed to send it to the Solicitor General. I sent it to the U.S. Attorney General, and it was Sessions. And I said that I'm not a U.S. citizen, so therefore your requirement to send this to the Solicitor General is moot, and I have to, under the original Judiciary Act, the Attorney General is supposed to respond. And so here, Mr. Sessions, here's your opportunity to respond. Well, so what happened is he didn't respond. I guess they went and turned it over to the Solicitor General, but the time had run out for them to respond. They responded late, actually. And what they do is their response is never signed, okay? And which is, again, it shows that they don't have any authority. It says right in the rules that all documents have to be signed. And so in their response, it was just a line where the signature is supposed to go and the name is typed, right?
Right. You got the memo.
Yeah. So it's all a big farce, okay? And so then I figured, well, I can't sue them. It's not going to do me any good to sue them. So now my only remedy is to file a criminal complaint. So we'll see what happens with this criminal complaint. It was with a bunch of judges for assaulting me with their DC codes, basically for all of their codes, and the clerks and everything are all everything that they do is color of law. And so you can actually file a criminal complaint against them for even assaulting you with their rules. And that's what I did. One of the things that I did is these clerks were assaulting me with their rules, which is a violation. They were threatening me, intimidating me, coercing me, and they were that's conspiracy. But there's also, you have to use their words.
Yeah, so, I know the feeling. I know the feeling.
Yeah, they have to. I mean, you saw what happened with Clinton, right? They went and instead of saying that she was grossly negligent, they said it was extremely careless, right? So they didn't use the words of the statute, and they used that as justification not to prosecute her, right? Remember that?
Right. Yeah.
And so you have to use their words, and so, you know, under Title 18, United States Code, Section 242, if they willfully subject you to the deprivation of your immunities, then that's a felony. Okay, as a state citizen, I'm immune to all of that stuff, and so you know, I guess we'll see what happens. But I was really careful to use their words, and you know, we'll see what happens. It was against must have been there was probably about 10 or 15. It was 280 pages is what it was. And what I did was I sent the original to the to Trump. I sent the original to Trump, and then a cover letter, and the cover letter was to Trump, to Sessions, to Tillerson, to Homeland Security, to Judiciary Committee in the House of Representatives, and the U.S. Congress, and I told them all basically that. That attached to these criminal complaints, and I went and sent them a copy, and I also provided them a link to Google Docs where they can, I said, you're more than welcome to circulate this to anybody you wish, and, you know, so we'll see what happens. I can tell you that in the past, when I've done this kind of stuff, it has an effect. It always, there's always things that happen because of it. You can't imagine how many times.
I certainly hope something happens because Sessions isn't on my highest list of favorite people at the moment.
Actually, there's a lot of people that are saying that maybe somebody's got some dirt on him or something like that because he doesn't seem like he's vociferous or that strong about going after these people.
No, he doesn't.
I think also part of it is you know, I mean, we've seen how many people in the FBI were basically bought and paid for by Clinton, and so it makes you wonder how many people in the Department of Justice are the same thing, and it just hasn't come out yet, you know?
Well, that's true. I mean, they had a long time for Obama to put people into places there that would do the bidding. But, you know, again, I kind of look at the whole menagerie as being, they're all pretty much puppets to a greater power. But you and I, we'll get down that road into the Matrix probably at another time. You know, it concerns me that I can see so many people out there who have obviously just stood up and, you know, they're awakening. There's an awakening going on, standing up for the protection of their rights. But you have these prosecutors who are willfully violating their own rules, by the way, their own martial rules, however you want to word it, but they're violating their own rules and not being fired, not being charged, not being held to account. I mean, you even had Sessions come in and over the Bundy thing, and of course, then the prosecutor is determined to have been guilty of Brady and Giglio violations, but for some reason was never held, not only not held accountable, I think it was oddly interesting how he was transferred to the Las Vegas shooting case afterwards. But, you know, very interesting things going on that are eye-opening.
Oh, absolutely. And I think, well, you know, I guess we can only hope that it will all come out in a wash. But I think that Trump wants to do the right thing, but he's basically surrounded by these people. And it's hard to find people for these positions that aren't in the deep state, you know?
I can think of some places to find them. You just reach down into America where you don't have career politicians, and those are the people you put in place. But if you keep using for lack of a better term, and I'm going to say it, if you keep using these same ensconced DC assets, what do you expect is going to happen? I mean, it's just that simple.
Yeah, no joke. I agree. And that was one of the reasons, like this criminal complaint was to build a case against bar members because I showed in this criminal complaint how all these people were bar members and how they were not interested in justice and they were busy, you know, anytime a judge, like for a filing fee, for something as simple as a filing fee, if the judge, gets involved in the filing fee, Well, then he just walked away from being a judge in his official capacity. He just became in his private capacity, a clerk masquerading as a judge. He's operating under the Federal Tax Lien Act of 1966. He's in his private capacity. He's no longer representing the government. He's representing an unconstitutional corporation that was set up in 1871. And the case Downs versus Bidwell even talks about it. And there's in the case Downs versus Bidwell, it talks about how there's two national governments. One operates within the Constitution and the other one doesn't. Well, that's telling me that the other one's unconstitutional then. And so they basically walk away from being an Article III judge, and so they can be a bought and paid for a clerk masquerading as a judge, and then assault you with their codes and rules, and call it justice. Say, oh yeah, he agreed. It's a contract, and that's
by our own consent.
Yeah. And so that's what my criminal complaint was full of, that all these judges. And I said, I witnessed this judge cease to represent the government. I witnessed this judge operate in his private capacity. I witnessed this judge become a bought and paid for a clerk masquerading as a judge. I witnessed this judge. You see what I'm saying? And so there might be like about 100 hits on one judge alone, 100 little paragraphs on one judge alone, where I witnessed him engage in war crimes. I witnessed him assault me with his District of Columbia codes. I witnessed him. You see what I'm saying?
I see what you're saying. And you made mention of the word martial law, which is something that that Bruce Ray Riggs and Laurie Anderson and I have brought up many, many times. The martial law jurisdiction that is still in place and has been in place for over 150 years now.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, matter of fact, and that was what I was going to eventually talk about in this tonight, if we got to it, quite frankly, but it's all war crimes. They're engaging in war crimes on you. Under, it says here, this is taken a definition taken from Black's Law Dictionary, 5th edition, page 1420, and it says, a mixed war is one which is made on one side by public authority and the other by mere private persons. And so they're engaging in warfare on you. And then if you think about this, if they're armed, okay, well, the Geneva Convention, relative to the protection of civilians in the time of war of 1949, says that it applies to any armed conflict. So when the cops stop you on the side of the road, that is an armed conflict. And it even talks about it in there, whether both parties recognize that it's an armed conflict or not. And it covers it perfectly, actually. So that's what I've been hitting on lately. And in fact, a friend of mine was telling me that he knew people that were in jail, and they did basically a habeas corpus, and they brought up the issue of war crimes, and they kicked their butt out of there. So it's all war crimes.
Well, that's an interesting outlook. And keep in mind, folks, we're talking to a pretty accomplished engineer. I think that you're pretty good at breaking things down and figuring out the parts. Well, you know, many of us in this fight for freedom have uncovered amazing research and information. And of course, we all have our own interpretation to it. But you know, a lot of this, I hear the same theme being brought up time and time again by people doing independent research. Now, you know how these talking heads political persuasions, they get themselves into an echo chamber and a bubble where they all start repeating themselves. But here in this community, I've noticed a phenomena when it comes to kind of delving into the matrix. And you have a lot of very intelligent people who independently begin to research on their own, and they're all coming up with the same conclusion. And wouldn't they call that peer-reviewed research? At some point, some of this stuff has to be recognized as being pretty valid. I mean, there's a lot of people that hear about this for the first time, and their cognitive dissonance keeps them away from it. But, you know.
Yeah, ain't that the truth? Anyways, in Article 2 of the Geneva Convention relative to the protection of civilians in a time of war of 1949, it says that in addition to the provisions which shall be implemented in peacetime, the present convention shall apply to all cases of declared war or of any other armed conflict which may arise between two or more of the high contracting parties, even if the state of war is not recognized by one of them. And then the convention shall also apply to all cases of partial or total occupation of the territory of a high contracting party. And so even if the said occupation meets with no armed resistance. And so if you think about that, that could apply to a police encounter, and because they're armed and they're engaging in war crimes. Because, first of all, there's stuff in the Geneva Convention that says that they cannot coerce you to give information against yourself. And matter of fact, you could use that against Facebook for collecting information on your coercing. Like, they won't even let you have a profile now without putting your real name on it or something like that. You see what I'm saying?
Well, yeah, and, you know, I used to have a position on that, you know, but the more I look into that, and I know that it's being used for a social engineering tool, they are a private corporation. However, that being said, they're also government subsidized. So the subsidies that are involved and the Federal Reserve notes, of course, they trade in, make them subject to the same rules and terms and conditions. I think a lot of people don't understand that. You have the crowd that says, well, they're a private corporation, private corporations that you engage into consent, into the contract of agreeing to have a profile there. Well, in today's day and age, Facebook, in my opinion, is being used as a communications medium, no different than Ma Bell back in the old days, remember? And it's kind of a hypocritical argument to say that the government had the authority to break up Ma Bell. They had the authority to intervene in a private corporation. Of course, Ma Bell at the time was also receiving government subsidies, which I think was the one of the loopholes in. And then there was the factor that they said that they were a monopoly because they were so powerful, so strong, which, you know, that's a whole other debate in another time. But Facebook in and of itself, I see the deprivation of rights. Now, that being said, there, you know, you have the aspect of the government subsidies, and you have voices being silenced. You have accounts being closed for so-called terms of use, but these terms of use violations are also being decided upon by whom? With what accountability? With what redress? Now, if there is my position is if they're following, if they have to follow the criteria that any other government subsidized entity has to follow, it seems that the government isn't doing their due diligence in protecting and preserving the rights of the people, of course. And this is not just Facebook. This is in just about every aspect of our lives. But I think that's a valid point.
Well, and actually, there's a lot of information out there that suggests that the CIA was directly involved in setting up Facebook, just like
yes,
the CIA
yes.
was involved in Google, too. And
yes.
so there's,
all right, Glenn,
there's
Glenn,
ulterior stuff.
I have to cut you off for a second. We're going to break. Resurrect the Republic, RTR Truth Media Reloaded. We'll be right back after a few words from our sponsors.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Many people write us about their experience with Extendivite. Allow me to read you some from Amazon.com. It really does work like the review says it does. I cannot believe that after the first few days, I didn't feel as sluggish or clogged up. It has had a profound impact on my physical, emotional well-being. I'm skeptical as most people about products and their claims, and I never write reviews, but this is a wonderful product and I recommend it to everyone. Great product. It has brought my blood pressure from the mid-150s over the 80s to the mid-130s over mid-80s. Along with diet and exercise in just the past couple of months. Excellent. Thank you, David. Tell us your story. Get Extendivite today. Call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AirOutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magpul clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AirOutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AirOutfitting.com.
Welcome back. Resurrect the Republic Truth Radio Broadcast. The Republic Broadcasting Network. RTR Truth Media Reloaded. Folks, don't forget RTR Truth Media on Twitter. RTR Truth Media on YouTube. Go to these channels and spread it around. Also, for those of you that are in the Chatango chat, that's Resurrect the Republic at Chatango. I feel really bad that I can't be in that room and have that screen up while I'm on the air right now because of the circumstances I'm in. But we fully plan to be utilizing Chatango when we come back into a normal studio environment. So I urge everyone to go to Chatango, Resurrect the Republic at Chatango, and I'll start putting links out there for that. For those of you that don't know it, it's a chat room that we use to share links and content while the show is going on. Glenn, we were talking about Google, Facebook, CIA's, the involvement. You want to pick up where we left off there?
Yeah. Basically, so there's actually an article in the Geneva Convention, but more than that, we're under a military occupation, especially if you consider that in the Royal Proclamation of 1763, it defined the colonies at the time, and it said in there that anything west of the colonies in 1763 was Indian territory, and you had to actually have a passport to go there. And so it was off limits to anybody. And so you got to consider that it's all under a military occupation, except for the original 13 colonies. And some of that could be under it as well. Now, and then you take into account the Civil War would definitely put the southern states under a military occupation. And then in the Spanish or the U.S. war with Mexico would put all of that territory under a military occupation. And
stopping at the Civil War there, it could be argued, and Bruce Ray Riggs and I have argued this for a long time, that the implementation of the 14th Amendment, because of the Southern States Rebellion, that jurisdiction that was forcefully applied to every state in the Union as it comes into the Union, is an extension of that martial law jurisdiction from the Civil War. So it's almost like anything that happened after that point could be considered under that same jurisdiction, I believe. But go ahead.
Well, you're 100% right. Matter of fact, the Downs versus Bidwell case said that it was the dissenting opinion in the Downs versus Bidwell case said there's two national governments, and one operates, let's see if I can find it here real quick, one operates within the Constitution and the other one does not. And so the second one is an unconstitutional corporation, and in fact, in the Chisholm versus Georgia case, back in 1794, it said that there was no nations on the planet except possibly the United States of America. And so it said they were all societies. So then if you think about that, then what that unconstitutional corporation that was set up in 1871 was a society to go along with the existing paradigm. You see what I'm saying?
And so, yeah, I see what you're saying.
So the 14th Amendment, everything subsequent, like the 13th Amendment, basically replaced the original one. So the current 13th Amendment and subsequent is all for the unconstitutional corporation. And none of it applies to the de jure republic. And so all of those people can work for the de jure republic. All of our public servants can work for the de jure republic, or they can work for the unconstitutional corporation. And when they do something like when you're in court, for example, and the judge basically practices law from the bench, or he gets permission from the prosecutor to do something to show that he's a bought and paid for a clerk, and he just walked away from working for that de jure corporation or the constitutional republic, he walked away from that to work for the unconstitutional corporation. And I go through all of that in my in that criminal complaint, that 280-page criminal complaint. And so I go through all of that step by step and show, and it's basically an attack on bar members, because that's really the problem. Matter of fact, in my first Supreme Court case,
is it really an attack on bar members, or is it dialogue? Because they, in my understanding, they are the ones that are doing the attacking. So I think that what is the response of somebody who's being attacked but to defend? Isn't that not correct?
Well, yeah, I guess that's probably true. But the point is that I want to show that there's no justice, there's no Article III courts, that Congress has breached the trust by failing to provide Article III courts, okay? They have to have, they got to provide Article III courts, and they're not doing it. And in fact, there's no Article III courts in the country. I don't care if it's state or federal, because it's all bar members that are running the whole show. And so they're all foreign agents of the Roman cult, and they have no authority, and they know it. Matter of fact, under the original Article 13 and Amendment, they're not even U.S. citizens. And they shouldn't hold a position of trust that requires an oath of office. You know, it's all a fraud. It's actually the UN is what you're seeing that's going on all around here. It's the UN. And quite frankly, as much as I despise the UN, if that's our only remedy, well, then there is a remedy that's available there. And that's why I bring up this issue of the war crimes under the Geneva Convention and the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights and the Universal Declaration of Rights. Now, I got to tell you that I had a run-in in Canada with the Canada border pigs, and so recently I sent some really, really scathing letters to who's who in Canada, like the Governor General, the Prime Minister, the Queen, the Attorney General of Alberta and Canada, and it was like I sent out about 100 of them, and it basically said, and I don't want to mention the four-letter words that I used in that letter. So
No, please don't.
Yeah. So, anyways, I basically said, normally I accept your oath of office, but we already know that you're going to ignore your oath of office. So, and then I use some four-letter words and call them all sorts of names. You see what I'm saying? And then
I see what you're saying. I choose a little bit of a different route, but I understand.
Well, no, actually, under international law, if they don't follow the law, then you're perfectly justified to use whatever force is necessary to get a remedy.
And so I know. I happen to be Christian, and we try and keep it clean. Not for them.
I know.
I don't do this for them. I do that for myself.
Well, the important thing to understand here is that the issue was, there was a judge, an associate chief judge of the Court of Queen's Bench in Alberta by the name of Rook, that issued this pseudo-commercial argument order that basically targeted people like me, even had my name in it. And so he was basically engaged in war crimes for my political beliefs. And so in that document, I go in there and I say that you're engaged in war crimes. And if you want a piece of me, you just name the time and place. I'll come armed. We'll settle it for once and for all. And I said, furthermore, I know that all your hired thugs are cowards because they'll never take us up, take me up on that, and never face me on their own, and they operate in packs. And I just tore a strip off them.
Well, you didn't mince any words, did you?
No. And so, anyways, the point being is that in Alberta, they have a chief judge and associate chief judge of the Court of Queen's Bench. Rook was the associate chief judge, and normally the associate chief judge becomes the chief judge when he retires. And the chief judge had retired when I served this letter. The chief judge's position was vacant. And what happened is I served this thing on the Attorney General for Canada. Within 2 weeks, they announced the appointment of a chief judge, and they bypassed Rook.
Well, that is very interesting. That is the point, isn't it?
That's the point. That's the point, because Canada has a War Crimes Act, and it brings in the International Criminal Court and all sorts of stuff. And I told them, you guys are involved in war crimes. You're persecuting me for my political beliefs. You're pillaging my property. You're taking reprisals against me. And I tore a strip off them. And I said, anytime you want to meet, we'll settle it for once and for all. And, you know, I really got belligerent. It was really, really belligerent, but that's what happened. And so the point being is that, It's the war crimes is a valid argument, and that's why they haven't really adopted in the U.S. the Rome Statute, which is for the International Criminal Court, and I understand why they haven't, because the U.S. intends to engage in war crimes. You know, it's obvious, and so they want to get away with it, and until they accede to that. And I have no great love for the UN, I guarantee you. But
I agree with you there.
So
I agree with you there. But they have their purpose, I suppose.
Well, yeah, if they're doing them in a foreign country, but they're not. I mean, they go and label you a sovereign citizen. That's a war crime. They say this guy's a sovereign citizen. You ask Sal about what happened with him.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, well, I have. And, you know, that sovereign citizen business is an oxymoron anyway, very interestingly termed.
Oh, of course. Of course it is. And it all precipitated from a guy in Arkansas that got stopped by a code enforcer. I think it was for speeding or something like that. And this guy, you know, he read a couple court cases and basically got in a gunfight with the police and shot and killed a cop, and then they hunted him down and killed him too. But the point is that should that for speeding, okay? There's no breach of the peace for speeding. Okay, I can show you court cases that say that. So why was this cop stopping him in the first place? How come they can't just leave him alone? You know, I mean, don't get me going about this.
I'm not trying to. Calm down. Now, calm down. Don't get going about it. Take a deep breath.
I know. But that's
let's
that's
stick,
what
let's
happens.
Stick to the law. Let's stick to the law and exposing it
well,
for what it
again,
is.
Again, speeding is not a breach of the peace. And if there's no breach of the peace and if there's no court order, then that cop just walked away from being in his official capacity as a peace officer into his private capacity as a revenue officer, because that's what he was looking to generate for the speeding ticket is some revenue under the Federal Tax Lien Act of 1966. So now he was in his private capacity.
Which, by the way, I have to make mention that most police officers don't know about a lot of this. Now, some of them are learning it, but I have friends who are cops. I have family who are cops, and I have to tell you, you know, and I want to say this because we're talking very harshly about those who are following orders, but you know, I have a high degree of respect for these people in my family that I know personally got into the job because they honestly in their heart wanted to protect the people. But like, you know, you have some of these sheriffs who are waking up a lot quicker than a lot of other peace officers are as to the fact that these Federal Reserve revenue generators have basically fused an honorable profession, and they play upon the hearts and the minds of patriotic Americans who want to serve their public, and then they fuse these jobs together. And there's no mistake that you have 22 veterans a day committing suicide. You have police committing suicide. It's a completely stressful job because, you know, of all of these other factors involved. But take into account the fact that they have fused revenue generation with peace officer work to give cover to the revenue generation aspect of it. I have seen more cops come out and say, these quotas are ridiculous. This is about money. This isn't about protecting the public. I mean, these guys are starting to wake up, thank God. But then again, you have... What's that?
There's YouTube videos about their cops are putting up there that because they get fired for not meeting their quotas. And I will be the first one to say, when I helped Sal prepare his paperwork to serve on all the local code enforcers, and I, the last paragraph in there says that I understand my duty to come to your aid when you're operating in your lawful capacity as a peace officer, and I'll be there for you anytime, any place. And so we all have a duty under posse comitatus. Anybody over the age of 15 is on the posse. So we all have a duty to come to their aid when they're operating in their official capacity as a peace officer. But 99% of the time, they're not.
Yeah, I have to, you know, I do agree with you. I've had for a very long time a huge problem with that. And it goes, that rabbit hole in and of itself doesn't stop with law enforcement officers. You're talking about CPS. You're talking about code enforcement. You're talking about, I mean, it just goes on and on and on for these central planning agencies. Collectivism is just out of control.
Well, it is. And that's what my YouTube videos are, what I talk about in my YouTube videos. And that's why I talk about, you know, the military occupation and the war crimes and all the rest of it, because that's what it is. It's a war crime. And there's court cases where there's a one, Jordan versus City of New London, where a guy by the name of Robert Jordan had a master's degree, sued the City of New London because they refused to hire him, and it went all the way to the Court of Appeals. He had failed. He had, there was an intelligence test, and he scored too high on it. They don't want anybody with brains this. They deliberately screen out intelligent people, and that's not to say that all police officers are brain-dead idiots, but so some of them figure it out, and some of them want to do the right thing, and some of them do. But most of them are a bunch of brain-dead idiots. They're thugs.
That gives you a whole new perspective under equal protection under the law. I mean, my stepfather was a criminal investigator. He was a cop, and then he became a criminal investigator, worked for the prosecutor's office. The mobile crime lab was the coolest thing when I was a kid. You know what I mean? It was like Kojak. I was living with Kojak, you know. He did homicide and investigation and stuff like that. But he is highly intelligent, and he got into a situation with his employer where he walked away from the job permanently. He walked away. He was done. And this is what happens to good, intelligent, and like I said, I'm not saying that all of them out there are not intelligent. What I'm saying is that this job has a way of weeding out people who stand up for what's right and under principle. And they ostracize you. They force you out, and then what you're left with are order followers, essentially, that will do whatever they're told. You know, I watched a street preacher who was just preaching on public property, preaching the Bible, and the police officer came up to him and said, "There's a city code that says," and he says, "Well, there's a First Amendment that says," and he put his handcuffs on him and arrested him for disturbing the peace, of all things, disturbing the peace by preaching the Bible on a public place, exercising a First Amendment protected right. So obviously the First Amendment is dead when they can corral you and say, well, you know, you can go to your First Amendment area. I mean, they're really outing themselves pretty well, I think, when they do things like this. So I try and show the people how they're doing this and why they're doing this. But I think what you're talking about explains it in a deeper level.
Yeah, exactly. It's they want them to do that, it's their bosses. Okay, that's where it's coming from, is their bosses. And what happens is I serve, that's part of my procedure, I serve their boss with a registered letter. I basically build a case against him and his hired employees. And most of them, quite frankly, are honorable. And I've never had any trouble with them. But occasionally, like, for example, a good example is the Pennsylvania Attorney General. I served him with a letter designed to take away his presumptions. It was back then. That was back in like 2009 or something. Anyway, so it was like maybe 6 pages. It was small compared to what it is now. Anyways, I served him with a letter, and one of the things I said in the letter was, "I'm going to be traveling in your area, and I don't have a driver's license." And one of his hired thugs sent me a letter back saying, "If you drive in Pennsylvania without a driver's license, we're going to arrest your butt and take you down and put you in jail." And so I made an affidavit. I attached my notice and demand to their letter, to the affidavit, and I sent it to the U.S. attorney in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. And what happened is 2 weeks later, I get a letter back from the U.S. attorney saying, "We've referred this matter to the FBI. And then about 6 months later, I'm checking the Pennsylvania Attorney General's website, and they have an acting attorney general. So the point being is that I think I got his butt removed. And the big point is that we do have a lot of good and honorable people that work for us as public servants. And so we shouldn't just automatically assume that they're a gang of crooks. But there are crooks among them, and we have to do like we would do in any case, is build a case against them and file an affidavit, a criminal complaint with the authorities and you know, try and get them to deal with the matter. And so we do have a lot of good people at workforce, there's no doubt.
Yeah, well, we're under a state of, really, it's kind of, I tell people all the time, it's kind of a form of mind control that this authoritarianism has been programmed into many generations of Americans from the time that you go to school. What do you learn in school? You don't learn real history. You don't learn real information. You don't learn about the Constitution. You don't learn about even how to manage your financial affairs or what the Federal Reserve is. You know, most people that I walk into a bank and I ask them, is the Federal Reserve a government agency? They all tell me yes. I ask them, do you know what fractional reserve banking is? They don't know. Do you know what a fiat currency is? No, they don't know. These are people that are working in financial institutions, handing out Federal Reserve notes and collecting them. They have no idea. And so I don't blame, just like I don't blame the average American citizen person, you know, for lack of a better term, the average American, I don't blame them for not knowing, because they've been under a form of decades and decades and decades long programming indoctrination by a Department of Education, which in and of itself is not remotely constitutional. I just Charlotte Isherbeat, I think, blew the lid off of that. She was she worked for the Reagan administration, and she basically calls it fascism. Basically, it's what it is. And, you know, so we have generations of Americans who are they're taught, and, you know, they go to every department in government, and they toe that official line. And when you come across the truth and you try and share it with them, it's like you smack them in the head with a board.
Yep, that's a fact. I think a lot of it is more than that, too. I mean, because they've been force-feeding people fluoridated water and all of these drugs and stuff. It's more than just the educational system. I mean, you know, they deliberately dumb people down. I mean, you know, and all of this, you know, hopefully with the current president is starting to be exposed. And so hopefully it's going to come to an end, but it's going to take time.
Well, that's true. And that's what we're here to do, is to share information, provoke thought. And you know, I also want to ask you to shoot me over the links to the different cases that we discussed here tonight, so that I can put that in the description of the podcast, as well as on the broadcast page at RBN, and in the YouTube video I'm going to be putting out there, so we can share these links around, let people read these documents and read these cases for themselves, so that they can better inform themselves. You know, it's education is everything. Knowledge is power.
Yeah, no problem. I can put the sites, if that's what you're wondering. And it'll have
any relevant links, cases, anything that you think will be helpful for tonight's broadcast, we'll put in there. And folks, we've run out of time for Resurrect the Republic tonight. I can only do an hour tonight. God bless all of you. And I thank you, Glenn, for joining us. And we look forward to having you back in the future. Thank you very much, sir. And all of you out there. Go ahead.
All right. I'll include my website and all that stuff, too, I guess, eh?
Yeah. You want to mention it real quick?
It's www.sovereigntyinternational.fyi.
There you go. Sovereigntyinternational.fyi. Folks, we'll catch you again tomorrow. Resurrect the Republic, Truth Radio Broadcast, RTR, Truth Media Reloaded, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Good night.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.